Detta är kassett nummer 2. Det är fortsättning på intervjun med Ivor Johnson, Michael Hines, Ohio. Och det är idag den 19 juli 1985.
Then in Cleveland, and then they got bad down here in Cleveland, you know, during the Depression.
Yeah, so you went home 28?
Yeah, I went home in
then
28.
Then it was good times.
Yeah, it was all right then.
What was it in Sweden at that time?
So-so. They started there too. Had started, but I didn't. We didn't see much. You know, they were.
Did you meet some of your old friends then? Did they have a good job?
Yeah, they were working in Sweden, you mean? Yeah, sure.
I mean, your friends that you left?
Oh, yeah, sure, that I had left. And they were, had farms and they were working at home on the farms.
Were they interested of asking you how it was over here?
Yeah, well, they talked about it and they talked about. Not too much about America. They says you seem to be doing all right. You look fine. You have a nice wife, and you had a boy with me. He was 2 years old at the time.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, he was two. He had his second birthday in Sweden.
Uh-huh.
He was born the 21st of August.
Uh-huh. So they all understood that you were going to return again.
Yeah, no, I was born in
Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
So after 3 months, then you came back here.
I came back here.
So you rented the flat on
the on the yeah, I rented down on 92nd and St. Clair.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh.
In the Cleveland Heights.
Yeah. That was my
East
it was my mother-in-law's house.
I see.
Yeah.
So you
Hugo Swanson, my brother-in-law, he lived there on the second floor and I lived on the first floor.
Oh, see. And how long did you stay there?
Oh, we stayed there. He stayed there until I went back to Long Island.
You went to
Yeah, I went back to Long Island again, mind you. Because there was slack, there was Dolet Marbet there. It was start of depression here. So my cousin
in 28.
Yeah. In 28. So my cousin, he says, you can come down here and help me. He was doing work, you know, in the same line in the floors and things like that. You can come down here, he says, He was contracting floors and things like that. He can come down here, he says, but I can't pay you more than $10 a day. And I thought that would be, you can work full week. He says, you can work 6 days a week. So $60 a week looked good to me. I went down there.
Did you have a car then?
Yeah, I drove down. I drove down all by myself to find out first how they were. How it was, you know, I couldn't take my family with. So they stayed here in Cleveland for about 3 months themselves. And I sent my wife money, of course, you know, constantly. Oh. So she could live, and the children, we had two children, see, Paul and Virginia. And then it was all right there. I kept on working and I saved money and I said, no sense in her staying here in Cleveland. She's got to come down here, see? So I says, you get ready, pack, and come down. So she did.
She
came to Long Island.
She took the train then?
Yeah, she took the train. And they came in on the train. I drove into New York on a Sunday morning. They came in, but in the meantime, on Saturday, the mover had come there, see? So I had already arranged for a home, you know, to live in. In fact, I was interested in buying it.
On Long Island?
In Long Island, yeah, in Rockville Center. Yeah. So everything was all set with her because I had a cousin's wife, you know, Mrs. Carlson. She was there and arranged and put curtains up and everything, you know, and had every nice place to furniture and everything. So there I drove into New York and got my wife and the two kids, and we come and walk right in there. It was fine. They were happy, sure. And in the meantime, I arranged, so I bought the house. I bought the house for $9,500.
In 1928?
In 1928, yeah.
Well, there must have been a pretty good house in 9,000.
Yeah, so I kept on going. It was pretty good for them. Then they got bad down there, too, and depression set in. And I lost my house. I only had $3,500 to pay on it yet.
And they took it?
And the bank took it.
And there was no way to...
Yeah, it was through right there. But then, before that happened, that they took the house, I rented it out for $65 a month. It was a nice house, see? And I rented another place in another little village, Oceanside, they call it, for $35 a month. So that would help a little. It was $30 there, you know, every month, see?
But the house the bank took, you didn't get that back?
No, I didn't. They hadn't taken it yet, but I mean, I rented it out. They hadn't taken it yet.
You could keep it then?
Yeah, I kept it then for about a year and a half, 2 years.
And you kept paying the mortgage?
I didn't pay nothing to it. When finally there was, I had no equity in there, you know, see? So they took it. And I had done a lot of work on that house. I had built the pantry there, and I had put in sidewalks and curbs and everything, you know. There was no sidewalks, no curbs. It was just open, you know, and in a dirt road, you see. So I did a lot of work, and my wife, she felt bad about it. She cried. And I says, well, there's nothing you can do about it. I says, this is just her things, you know, that's just...
And they happened to many others too?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't the only one, no.
Many on the same street?
Sure. They lost their homes, you know, right and left, all over America. See? That was very, very bad. Then Roosevelt finally came in, you see. And then he started WPA work, you know, and put people to work, you know. And I was on there, and he built sewers, put in new sewers and everything, you know. The government paid for, and the state of New York paid for to have the people doing it. And then they started to build Jones Beach. So I worked down there, but I could only work that 10 days.
A month.
Then there was another gang come in for 10 days, and then a third one gang come in for 10 days. Then next month you work another 10 days, but you got union wages, see? You got union wages, and you work. So we built the whole Jones Beach, the warehouses and concessions, you know, down there. And then when we were through with that, the government was through with that, and they turned that over to the state. So they rented these places out. See, the state was benefiting for what we had built it. See?
And what year was that?
That was 31.
31.
Yeah.
So how long did you stay there, not in Long Island?
17 years.
17 years?
Yeah. Before I come back here again.
So when did it start to open up then in the New York area?
Yeah, my children grew up there practically.
How could you keep the family going though? I mean, for several years there without more than very slack work.
Well, there was 2.5 years I didn't work nothing except for the WPA.
Yeah. And your wife wasn't working?
Yeah, no. She wanted to go to work, but I says no. You stay home, take care of the children, that's the main thing.
But how could you keep it going? Then you're...
Well, I got a little extra work. I met a guy, you know, a doctor down on Jones Beach. He was a dentist. We call him Dr. Thomas. And he had 3 houses down there. See? Mm-hmm. So I met him, and he wanted me to do in between, you see, between this work for the government and him. You see, then I was okay, yes, because he paid me, and I did all his carpenter work, his screens and outside repairs and inside and paint. I was painting and carpenter work. I did all kinds of work for him, so he kept me busy there. And the kids come down on weekends, you know, and they were swimming, and they could go in there and his little houses there, you know, and take a shower and things like that, run out, and the water come back, they had a good time in the meantime, and I was working there for him.
So you kept...
So I kept the float.
Surviving.
Yes, sure.
But your savings had gone by that time.
Yeah, my savings practically had gone, yeah, yeah.
But you had a car.
Yeah, I had a car, yeah.
And
yeah, and the tools. An old car.
And the tools.
Huh?
And a whole box of tools.
Oh, yes, yeah. I wasn't in despair. No, no, I said you have to take it on the chin. And
what did people say though? Were they desperate, many of them?
Well, there was many people that they went under. I mean, they just couldn't exist, you know, until Roosevelt got them, you know, weed, you know. See?
So nothing happened before Roosevelt came in?
No.
It was completely bad?
Yeah, there was... It was bad, them days, for everybody.
So then in the 34, 35, we started to pick up again?
Yeah, in 34, when he got himself established, started to pick up, and then they started to build again. Oh, yes. They got loans, and they were building apartment houses. So then they picked up again, you see, but my house was gone.
So there was no housing then between 29 and up to 35, to speak?
Yeah, sure. My, my house was gone.
It was gone?
Yeah, sure. So then, it got so bad, even for the banks. The bank that foreclosed on me, they went under. And I came down, and before they went under, and before I went, my house went, they came to me and they says, I have to reduce the mortgage for $1,000. I had a mortgage of 4,400, had to cut it down, it says, $1,000 to $3,400.
So they wanted $1,000 cash?
Yeah, so I came down to the bank with a certified check because I had arranged to get the new mortgage on it from another company, from the bank. So I says, here's your $1,000. And you know what that president of that bank, First National Bank in Rockville Center, he says, before I sign the papers and accept that money from me, he says there'll be $50 in for me. So I says to him, $50? Here's your check, I says, and you work for the bank, you're the president of the bank. Yeah, that's right. But that's a personal service, he says, that I got it. So I couldn't do anything. I says, well, I says, that's pretty low. That's pretty low, I says. I come here with $1,000 for you. You had asked for that, the reduction of the mortgage. And here's the certified check. And I says, and I changed my mortgage to this company here. And they gave me a certified check too. So I be still in debt to them, see. So... I paid it.
50?
Yeah, I paid him 50, and I had no choice, I had to go through with it. So, about 3 months later, or 4 months later, I see a guy out in the street, see. I was working for this doctor, you know, and I get along pretty good. So, I see him out in the sweeping, see.
That guy?
Yeah, that guy. So I was a mean guy though, I maybe was a little too, but I thought, geez, I'm going to stop and see this guy. So I says to him, his name is Mitchell. So I says, Mr. Mitchell, I says, bank there? Yes. I says, you were a president, because I know, you know. I recognize you were the president of this First National Bank. She says, that's right. He says, they went under, you know. Well, that's just the way you were handling it. I says, no wonder they went under. So I told him about what had happened. See. So, but I can't see this. I says, why you're doing this? He says, how are you doing? I says, got my old car sitting over there. I said, I'm doing fairly good, nothing extra, but I says, I don't have to sweep the sidewalks. I says, for them, I don't have to do that. I got little better jobs. He says, I work with my tools and I make a living pretty good. So, boy, he was down just like that.
He
said.
So,
what had he done wrong then?
He had done wrong because he had no business to collect $50 from me.
No, because that was what you call utpressning. Mm. But why did he? What did he do with that money? Would you think he had?
Yeah, he put that personally in his pocket. You see.
Yeah, but you would think he wouldn't go down and sweeping the street then. I mean.
Well, he didn't get much. He get maybe 50 cents an hour.
So he probably done something wrong investment too, or with
Well, he maybe had done something because he was out.
He was done.
He was gone. So.
President of bank.
Yeah, but I still could hold my head up.
Wasn't that good feeling though? You know, you had the upper hand there. So he asked you for $50 more.
Yeah, and he got it, because after I was arranged with the other bank, you see, with the loan. And I had a certified check from him, from them. My hands was tied. So even with the $50, he says he wouldn't sign the paper and accept the money, the $100,000 in payment. He wouldn't accept that, except I gave him $50 first.
Oh, that's pretty low.
And I experienced everything. I took it on the chin, right and left, but I walked out of that place with my head high anyhow.
But there was a lot of people, you know, they couldn't take it. In other words, they lost the
sure.
whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah. So it was, you went through a lot of things.
I went through a lot of things. Yeah.
So now then, when you started up to lay floor and floor polish and stuff like that, how did that work in your muscles then? I mean, you were lay off then for a few years. Then.
No, they didn't bother me, because every now and then there was floors again. Floors.
Oh.
I worked for the different contractors here in Cleveland. See?
So you stayed 17 years out there?
I say 17 years, I say 17 and a half.
So then you left for Cleveland again during the war?
Yeah, I came here. And then I lived with my brother-in-law and they were for a while. First I came here, see?
Yes.
Because they had asked me to come, and my wife, Mamie, she says, go down there and find out. Maybe they'd be nice if I could come back to Cleveland again. I got my two sisters there, see, Ruth and Hilda. So I says, you're right, I'll go down and try and see what they want down there and what is going on. So when I came here, Hugo Swanson, he was working for Jack and Hans. And my other brother-in-law, Eric Danielson, he had his own business. He had a welding shop, you know, down on repair, down on Hoff Avenue, down there in downtown, 37th Street, yeah. So Hugo was working for Jack and Ann, and he says, come and work for us. Yeah, get your job down there. So he talked to them and they said, send them in. So I came in there and I told them, you know, and of course, building trades was down here in Cleveland, and still they weren't doing anything because we were in a war.
So that was right in 43, 44?
Yeah, that was in, 1943. Yeah. So they took me out there and I got a job with Jack and Hans for $1.05 an hour, but we worked 12 hours a day, Saturday and Sunday. So they still amount to quite a bit pay, you know.
Was that below the union scale, or was it?
No, there wasn't union scale. There was, the union had a scale, all right, but it was union. But you had to join the union there and so forth, and you had to accept, they put you to work and see what you could do, you know. And
so that didn't
and I was inclined to learn anything, you see, at that time. So they gave me a job there and it turned out fine.
So the contractors, they didn't have to pay the union scale then, exactly?
Oh, you mean in the building trade?
Yes.
Yes, they had to. They were still, I was still belong there. But there was no work, you see. It was all defense work. Plants, there was a lot of carpenters that worked for Jack and Hans. There was a lot of people that worked in different, there was electricians and bricklayers. And those, and they worked there for Jack and Hans, same as I did, because there was no work in the building trade.
So then it started to pick up though after the war?
Yeah.
After the war though, then it started to pick up?
Oh yeah, yeah, sure, after the war.
So then guys like...
After the war was over, there were lack of homes. But then they couldn't get lumber. See, so they were... They had a heck of time to get lumber even for the home. So then they scrambled around and they got hold of old lumber, whatever they could, and they started up a little bit, and finally they got broke loose, of course they got lumber.
So there was a shortage in everything.
Sure. There was shortage of homes.
And shortage of hardware, hinges and everything.
Oh, sure. Then you felt good again. And you forget about the hard times you had and what you are going through.
It was behind you.
You started on the... That was behind you. And I started to look for another home. I found a home and I only paid $3,800 for it down there.
And you bought the home?
But, yeah. But it was all grown in. It was in Hempstead.
Well, that was on Long Island before you came.
So it was so bad that that home that I bought, so you couldn't even see the house, so grown in for trees and bushes, you know. And you have to lift up the branches like this and come up and see the garage in the back there.
So nobody's been living in it then?
Huh?
Nobody's been living there ever?
No, they hadn't been living there. The guy that sold it to me, he came from New Jersey. And he came out and through the real estate, of course, you know. And there was a young man that his son to the real estate man himself. He came down to me and he was only about 19, 20 years old. The real estate man, and he came down to me, he says, I got a house for you. He was taking me there and he showed me the house. So I signed the papers with him and I bought it. Yeah.
So it was easy to buy
I had $500.
Done?
No, done. That's all I had.
So it was easy to buy
But I was working though, see. I had an income, I was working. And I took all the scrubs out. You meet all kinds of people, Leonard, and there was a Polak next door.
Oh.
See? He wants to be a good guy to me. He talked to me, and I guess he found out that I was all right. I was honest. So when he saw me cutting these bushes down, see, he practically took the axe away from me and the saw. He says, I show you. Say, I should. So I thought to myself, my God, he's going to show me. I was born on the farm, for heaven's sake, you know, and all that.
He didn't know.
No, he didn't know that. So he took the axe and it's all away from me. I show you. He worked there and he cut, and I dragged it out and I put it out in the street, cut it maybe a little more with another axe, and I show you. Then my wife was standing in the back door there, see, and she stayed there. Let us come up there. She says, you're terrible, she says to me. I says, what am I doing? What is he doing? He says, that poor guy is much older than you are. He's doing the work. Well, I says, he taking the tools away from me and tell me to, he show me how to do it, see? She says, that's terrible. She says, pay him or do the work yourself. You know more about that stuff than he does, see? Well, I says, he's smart addict. He wants to do the job. But you couldn't argue with him, you see? So I go along with it, see? But he soon found out, you know. Then After I got the house clear and you could see the garage again, I fixed up the garage the first thing, and then I need a new roof on the house. At that time I had met the lumberman, Mitchell was his name too. He had a lumber yard, and he was the chief of the New York State Guard. He was the captain. So we talked, him and I, and I joined his outfit, the New York State Guard. It was during the war. After I joined him and we became acquainted, and we were nice, he says, "You come to me, and if you need any lumber, Ivor, come down, I give you everything you need." I says, "Even if I don't have the money for it." "Even if you don't have the money," he says, "you pay me sometime. You can pay me as little as you want, and you can drag it out if you want to. Take 2 years to pay it if you want to." He says, "You're a good guy," he says, "I like to help you." So I can go to him. He gave me the roof, and he gave me, you know, and I fixed up the roof and put on a new roof on the house. And I got paint, you know. No trouble. So then I stood with him and stood with the guard, and we were out drilling at night. We were in convoys going out to Jamaica, you know, driving like a crazy, you know, and go down on the beach in the middle of the night, and they were bombing the ships outside. You know, the Germans were sinking the ships, you know, because they were laying in the light of New York City.
Yes.
And they were laying, here's the New York City all lit up here, and they're laying out here, see? They could see the ships. Uh-huh. See, in the dark, and light on them. And they sunk them.
They did?
All the tankers and everything, the oil was floating in on Long Island, you know, on the beaches. Then I got a job down at the shipyard after that. In the shipyard, I was working with the shipyard in Kearney, New Jersey. So I had to drive in myself. I work at night. We started at 11:30 and went home at 7:30 something. So then the cops, you know, they come out and they says, "Where you going?" And I said, "Oh," I showed him the license and I showed him my identification card. He says, "Mr. Johnson, where are you going?" So I says, "I'm going to Kearney, New Jersey." He says, "What are you doing there?" I says, "I work in the shipyard. We're building dry docks for the Navy." I say, "Okay." They saw me every night I go in, because they get familiar with the guys that are traveling, you know. So they says, "He's all right, that guy. I saw him last night, or I seen him many times. He's going to shipyard."
So there was ration of gas then during the war?
Yeah, there was.
Yeah,
we built 11 dry docks there, and I worked there. Uh-huh. And one night we were sitting eating. We were eating at 4 o'clock in the morning, eating lunch. 4 in the morning. So one night, the steward there, you know, for this dock builders, they're off gang.
Yeah.
And we got 10 cents an hour more in the carpenters at that time, working for the dry dock. So this shop steward there, you know, he comes up and he had a big maul, wooden maul, you know, we were sitting at a long table eating lunch. He went in between and he hit that big maul in the table, so the thermos bottle, you know, someone went over and the coffee spilled out on it. So he says, "Get the money up here." So I says, "41, what happened?" Or so and so, we all asked that. He says, "This young man," he says, "he's an enlisted Marine, he's going in tomorrow. Tonight is the last night," he says, "he works here. And we collect the money for him." So get money up there, and he says he'll hand it over to him. You know, he got $780 he collected that night from, of course, there were a lot of guys there, you know. None of them give less than $5 or $10 apiece. So he got all that money, and he went home. See? And he turned it over to him, of course, you know, before he left. So he did a good thing, of course, you know. He collected the money for it and he sent them away. Yeah, yeah.
So that was the last day on the job. Detta är kassett nummer 2. Det är sida nummer 2. Det är fortsättning på intervju med Ivor Johnson. Mayville Heights, Ohio.
I worked there. So, and they were built in sections of, say, 110 feet, I think it was, wide, and then they go out sideways, see. We launched that, and then they put the next section to it, and finally, after they put 11 of them together, they could take the biggest aircraft carrier that, you know, Uncle Sam built. They could take that in on that dry dock, and they went through the Panama Canal. Them sections, they couldn't take the big dry docks like that, you know, through the canal.
So they went to the west coast.
Yeah, and they went to the west coast and out in the Pacific, so. The Navy didn't have to bring the ships home. The dry docks was laying in various places in the Pacific and South Pacific and all over. And when there were ships that was needed repair, that was bombed or were hit, you know, they repaired them right there, and they didn't have to go back home.
How was this job now at in the dry dock? Was it a rough job?
Yeah, no, that was easy. In a way, because we only handle heavy timber.
Oh, I see. So that was all by machinery?
And yeah, they was taken up by cranes, you know. So even if parts had to be go in there, you know, beams, you know, it was heavy. There just was one guy, he was regulating that, you know, he makes a motion to the guy that was operating that thing, and they grab hold of that piece, and they take it over to us, and they put it for. Well, we want to have it, see.
When you stay now on Long Island and also in Brooklyn, did you join any organizations like Vasa or Vikings or?
Yeah, yes, I did belong for the Vikings here in Cleveland,
and but
I
belong. Not on in New York.
No. But
did you belong to anything?
No,
then?
No. But I joined the Vasa down there, but then you got too busy and they got. In Brooklyn, New York, when I was first came over, joined, and they got too personal. I mean, they was they were discussing various things, and they didn't come to any agreement, and there was disturbance. So I didn't want to listen to that stuff. I didn't want to listen to people that had trouble with other families or anything like that. I thought that was ridiculous. They didn't belong in the lodge.
They was on Dean Street.
Yeah, that was on
Dean Street.
No, yeah, they were in.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah, they was on South Brooklyn.
Flatbush Avenue.
Yeah, and around there was Olympic Lodge, I think it was.
Olympic.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I quit them because I didn't want to hear anything. I thought, what the hell has that got to do with me? If you have trouble with, or the other guy had trouble with his wife, or another one was so-and-so. So I says, that's a lot of baloney, I don't like that.
So when you came to Cleveland then?
I came to Cleveland and then I joined here
in
later.
In the
1940s? Yeah, I came here.
Then you joined the Monitor or the Noble?
I joined the Noble.
Noble.
Right. And my wife was on the verge of joining too, but It so happened that she she told the doctors the truth. She was the person that wouldn't say anything except the truth. So when she came up for the doctor, she told the doctor, had asked her if she had any sickness, or before I take her in. So she says, I had rheumatic fever when I was 16 here in Cleveland. And I was quite ill for a while. They turned her down.
So she couldn't join them?
No, she couldn't join. But that was all right. She told the truth, and that's all. That's all. But other people, they wouldn't reveal anything after that. They said hadn't have any sickness or the world. They would join any of us and didn't reveal anything or didn't tell them.
So then you met a lot of the old Swedes here in Cleveland, Arthur Anderson and Alan Johnson. They were carpenters at that time.
Yeah, sure.
So like Arthur Anderson, he turned into contractor later on, and Stone Brothers.
He was always working for somebody, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And Herman Stone.
Herman Stone, yeah.
And Martin.
All them guys. We were working sometime together, and very little with Arthur. Arthur was Arthur Anderson. I can't remember who he was. I worked with Harold, though. I worked with Harold Peterson, and I worked with what you just mentioned.
Alan Johnson.
Alan Johnson. Yes, I worked with him. So, sure.
And then the Johnson construction.
Huh?
The Johnson construction.
Yeah, yeah.
On Mayfield Road.
Oh yes, yeah.
Was he a carpenter too, or just
Johnson?
Yeah, John Johnson. They had an office on Mayfield Road.
He was a contractor himself.
Yeah, he was a contractor.
I worked for them, yeah.
So they started up in the 50s then?
I worked for Villa Shores a lot. Mm-hmm. Carpenter. We built homes. We built homes
family
there.
Dwellings.
Yes. And it was the same story there. We put a frame in and everything was all set, and we had the roof on, and floors came in, and there was Ivory again. He was.
Well, you started up again.
Sure, yeah. They put me in. They know that I was there. So
you still had
I got arm. I got the dirty deal. He says you go in there and lay the floors. So I did.
You were one of the only one in Cleveland then.
Yeah.
To do the job.
I was in Cleveland. Yeah, back here again.
And then
my wife got sick, and she had rheumatic fever, you see, and that affected her. She was 16, and she got a weak heart. But the other organs in her was tops. She was good. Her liver and her kidneys and her, it was the heart, because there was enough. So she was sick for 9 years.
For 9 years?
In and out the hospital, all the time. And I spent New Year's Eve, I spent Christmas Eve, many Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and the holidays. She always got sick. She maybe worked till 2 hours before Christmas, and she got sick when the holidays comes up. She was sick again in the hospital. So. And 9 years, she was just in and out. She asked me many times that I should go out. See, I belong to the lodge, I belong to the Masons up there, and she says, why don't you go up to your lodge, Abelia? You sit home here with me all the night after night. And I says, well, I says, it's better for me. I don't want to see that anything happen and I shouldn't be home and you need help. I can call you, she says. I can call you. I got your large number up there, and I can call you. You can come home in 10 minutes. But I didn't come. And when I worked, we had nice neighbors there next door. See? And they came in to see her and checked on her, when I was working. They were nice. And the church people came to see her, and the people, the pastors and the, you know, assistants, they came to see and talk to her. They were very nice. Yeah. Then she passed away. This in 1959. Yeah. She passed away. She been sick for 9 years.
But your children were grown up then, and
yeah, the children were big then, of course, sure. And the doctor said that she wouldn't have lived that long. She couldn't have lived that long if it wasn't for her family. Her husband took care of her, and he was faithful to her, and he helped her, and the children were wonderful to her. That's what kept her alive. But then it got bad. She was going to have an operation, an open heart, and she couldn't take the anesthesia. When the doctor says to the anesthesia man, you have to give her a little more. And he says, that's as far as I can go, he says, to bring Mrs. Johnson back again. So then they quit right there. They had her all prepared otherwise. And she lived 2 more years then, and then she was gone. Yeah.
So the 50s then were good years in Cleveland with building trade. A lot of houses went up in Cleveland.
Yeah, yes.
50s and 60s.
There was a lot of houses.
And you continue to work?
I worked for one company that's all we built out in Lakeshore Boulevard, and homes out there. The Village Shores. They were nice people to work for.
And you were still doing the
floors? Well, yeah, no, I worked with the carpenters, and then when floors came up, the trim was going to go on, see. I take care of the floors, and then I put the trim on myself, go in one house myself, see. And of course in Canada that I was expert in floor laying, you see, I gained a lot of time there. Because the floors was nothing to me, there was 1, 2, 3 and the floors was in, see. The other guys, they was laying there pounding on their knees and they don't get nothing done, just with the floor. So when they came to put the trim on and everything, you know, then I placed the trim out, you know, an opening there. There was going to be the trim there. I set the trim. I cut it and mitered it. And then I says, that's for that house, and that's for that window, and that's for that door, and that's for the closet. And you see, I cut it up. They had it laying in the living room there, and they come in with muddy feet, and they walk right over these lumbers, see. And then when they got going and they got some part of it done, they always forgot something, see. And then they had to go back and finish it, see. And I didn't work that way. I clean out, and I had a system to it, you see. So the carpenters, bosses there, they says, he likes your work, the way you work, the way you're doing. You put your floors in and there's no problem for you. You have the trim, you put it in, you sweep out, you clean up. And I finish in one room at a time, you see. I go in, I do the bedroom, I do the other bedroom, and I didn't go out of there until it was complete. Then I sweep out and put my tools in there, and you know, and go home and come back the next day again, you know, and I know what I had left off, and I started in. They work a little here, a little there, and I never finished. I had to go back. He told me one time, he came up to me and he says, I have to go and finish up after the other guy. I says, no. If you want to, you can lay me off if you want to. I says, but I won't go and finish anything. When they started a mess there, and I says, I don't go back and do anything of their job. You get them, I says. Do you know what houses they were working in? Put them back and get them hell of leaving anything like that. You don't go back for anything for my houses. No, he says, you're all always finished. It's always finished up.
Were those younger guys or all the carpenters that did it like this?
Yeah, they were mixed up. They were young people, old ones, And they stayed and chewed a fat, two or three guys in one house, you know.
Do you mean they didn't have a toolbox where they have all the chisel in one row? And
yeah, yes, yes.
Nice polished saw.
Yes.
Everything's rusty.
Yeah, and then they stay and talk, you see. I didn't like that because if I figure this way, Leonard, if a guy is paying me, he's paying me good wages, and I ain't going to have my hands in his pockets. So I give him a good day's work, and I work the best I can to my ability. And if that isn't good enough, then he can lay me off, of course. See? But at least I have a conscience, and I says I can always come back and work for the guy. Even if there was juice, I didn't care for much. See?
They were hard to work for.
Yeah. And they did funny things, so I says I give them a day's work anyhow, because there can come a day when they have work. And if I have a good name for them and I had work for them, I can always get another job from them. See? And that may come in handy. So I had 8 to 10, you know, guys that I worked for here in Cleveland. And every time I came to them, and if they had work.
You got it.
Yeah, they got it, because they says, you work for us so-and-so, you work for me so-and-so. Didn't you, Johnson? I says, yes, I did. Bring in your tools. Mm-hmm. Bring them in. He says, you can work here. I wish you would have come a little earlier, though. He says, I'm not so busy now, but I'd take you in there for a few days.
You seen a lot of different changes. In the carpentry, with tools and the speed is done. And is it better today than it was 25 or 40?
There's nothing to it today.
In what way? You mean they're using?
Well, first of all, they do it too much in the factories. In the factories, they make cases for schools and everything else, and all they come up and with a big truck, and we all got to go out there and carry it in and place it there. That's it. It's just like. That cabinet comes in, they're supposed to be here, and that's all finished.
They don't miter the molding.
The only thing
they
was
to them on top now.
Huh?
In some cases, they just leave the molding on top of each other.
That's right.
You didn't do that.
So that's easy for them to do. It's nothing to the carpenter work. And then they have all the power tools and everything else. We had to cut everything by hand and at that time.
And miter.
And miter and everything. Yeah.
No.
Now everything is finished. They just carry it in and place it there, except the doors. The doors they gotta hang, and most of them, the frame is set right. The outside doors, it's steel, and the steel doors. So they all had to put on the hinges.
How many doors could a good carpenter hang a day? They always had a measurement that, you know, if you could hang so many doors, they said.
Well, when you two together like that and the doors, it's heavy, see. If you two together, guys together, you hang about 14.
14?
14 doors, yeah.
There's a lot of shizzling out there. And
yeah, sure. but we could hang 8 in the morning, and then we only had about 6 in the afternoon.
So you worked hard in the afternoon then?
Yeah.
I mean in the morning?
Yeah. You worked less in the afternoon. The afternoon,
sir. How about now the floor business? When you came into this wall-to-wall carpet, did you use a lot of floor?
On what?
It's been a lot of wall-to-wall carpet.
Carpet?
Yeah, in other words, wall-to-wall carpet. It doesn't have to be a good floor then anymore. They just put on plywood and...
Oh, I see, yeah, I see what you mean.
So there's been less to do in that.
Yeah, I know that. They do that, but sometimes you do the wrong thing, you see, in that respect. You put in the wood floor and you had say they have radiator heating, mm-hmm. See? That's in the floor. I was came to one guy and he asked me, there was liable, president of the carpenters local, and he says, Ivor, you know anything about floors? I says, yes, there's a friend of mine, he says, he's got a concrete floor, and he said, got radiant heat. And both him and his wife, he says, they work outside. And they come home at night and on the furnace, they haven't been in the house, he says. You can see dust on the, that's from the heat in the winter, see? Dust on the furnace. Where's that from? Well, I says, it's got concrete floor that's got no covers. So he says, what can he do? I says, he has to lay a new floor, wood floor, I says, on top of the concrete. See? So he says, would you do it for him? Yes, I said, I'll do it. So then do you have lay floors and you have a pan, you heat the pan, the tar, and you dip that floor, you know, so you get a little coating on there and you stick that in and you hit it with the hammer and that's it. You lay in all different designs, of course, see? And when he get that floor in, I says he doesn't need to scrape it, see? That's finished, and they finished already on the top. It's varnished, shellacked, and you don't have to do anything to that floor. It's supposed to fit nice, and if it's laid right. So I did that, and with the closet and all, and that's all right. When the heat hitting that concrete, see, they didn't bring up any dust through that because there was sort of a coating of tar there underneath that wood floor. So that's all right.
And they won't buckle up from the heat either?
No.
So you're all...
They were, could be so that I know that happened to me a couple of times that I noticed when I had put that piece in, it was some defect in it, see? So I take the hammer and I break it up and it open, and the closet door was maybe handy there, see? So the door was open or the door was off. I throw a piece in the closet that I had broken up. I come back about 2 hours later, and there was that piece I was going to lay floors in there. I had to come out of there, see? And I kicked it and I hit it and I said, what the same hell is this? It was stuck there already, see, because they happened so that that piece landed on the right side down with that tar on it. And it was stuck there. So then I took the hammer and broke it up, and there had a concrete to follow. That's how strong it was.
So that's pretty strong.
Yeah, sure.
So your old profession of scraping floors is all gone? They don't do that anymore?
No, they don't. They're machines now.
Machines.
And the later part of the years when I was working on floors, I didn't do it myself. I didn't have to because they had machines, and we had in the schools, we had these big machines. We had one 18-inch drum in the front and one in the back, and the machine you stand on top and you run that up and down.
But it was like a planer then?
Yeah, sure. You stand there and ride on it all day long. You have to watch those so you don't hit the base or you don't hit anything because they were cut.
They're cut, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Oh, you still had to do by hand on the edges?
Yeah, on the edges. But I was doing that for the school. And I was doing a lot of floors in one day with that big machine. I worked for a guy there, Harry Paulson, and he, after I come home at night, and I had to call him and tell him, I says, I'm finished on that job, so and so. You are? You finished? I says, yes. That's the boy, he says. He had me in another job, of course. So I was never loafing, I was doing what I was supposed to do, and I did. He says, you're doing great. Boy, you can handle that machine, he says, better than you can handle a car.
Yeah, you've been through a lot of different things.
Yeah, there are a lot of different
things. And you had the bank president sweeping the floor, huh? So what do you think now when you look back? Now you have... Dagny here, when did you marry? 1960?
Yeah, we've been married, believe it or not, for 25 years in September.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I see.
Oh. Yeah, because I know her and my wife, first wife, they were good friends, see? Mm-hmm. And they were together all the time. So sometime my first wife, she would suggest, she says, I tell you what, she says, I'd like to call Dagny and ask her. She was a widow. You know, she had raising two little boys. So she says, if I call her, would you go down there and pick her up? I says, sure, would you call her? I says, I'll go down there and pick her up and I'll take boat to you, up to your meeting. So the Betsy's, they had a Betsy meeting, they call her Betsy Ross. So that happened, of course, so I know her, see. But little did I think then, because Mamie was in pretty good health at the time, and she was not real up to par, but she was fairly good. So I never dreamt that there was going to be my second wife. Mm-hmm. So my first wife, she told me, she says, after I'm gone, she told me that she was couldn't be with me very long.
Well, of all the Swedes now that you have met and known in Cleveland, you are pretty soon now 90 years of age. You done a hard day's work and still surviving. Who are the survivors now, the old Swedes in Cleveland? You think the ladies or the men? Are there more widows?
More ladies. They took a survey at the Vasa Lodge not too long ago, and I don't remember just how turned out. How many?
More women.
More women. Over 65 than men.
So the men has died off then earlier.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see.
But I don't remember what the proportion was.
So you are one of the exceptions then. You are, after a hard day's work, you're taking it easy now.
Well, that's, you see, from, I contribute, the old age that contribute from working on the farm like that when you're young.
So you think they had a bearing, in other words,
because it, you couldn't be up to much mischief because you were had a job and you had a responsibility to yourself and to your mother. And working the farm, so you, that's all you were doing at the time, you see, you went.
And that motto, our creed, has followed you all through life.
It was
to do a good job.
Yeah, it was hard work, of course, you know, see. So I see guys that are running around here, they're jogging, you know. I've stopped them sometime. And I says, you guys, you're running here, jogging, and you're going to exercise. I says, I didn't have that problem when I was your age. You're running and running. I says, I had run from early morning to late at night, and I says, I was active all the time. I didn't have that problem, so I had to go run out and just keep on going for about an hour. I says, I had that the whole 12, 14 hours a day.
There was built in your daily life?
Yeah, I think that helped.
No.
So I came to the conclusion, Leonard, that hard work never kill anybody. Because I says to myself, if hard work would have killed me, then I should have been dead 30 years ago. I have no business to live so long. But that is not true. Hard work never killed nobody. No.
How about your friends now that stayed in Sweden? You have visited Sweden many times, back and forth.
Yes.
How did they do in life?
Well, no, they were guys that I met that I was going to school with. And he says to me, I says, what come happened to you, Herbert? His name is Herbert Swanson. So he was all crippled up, rheumatism, and he was, you know, in bad health. Well, he says, you see, that's hard work and so forth, and they work and if I says, Herb, no, they can't be, because they're going through the same thing as you have here. And I says, when I was young. And I says, I worked hard in the United States. So I says, it can't be. But you see, they don't take care of them. Some of them was drinking a lot, some of them was this and that. How they lived that I don't know, and they were not healthy. I met two or three guys that I go in school with that was in good shape. There was one guy, He was a policeman in Stockholm. And he belonged to the Coast Guard for about 6 or 8 years. And then when he came out of there, was discharged from there, he says he got a job down at the docks in Stockholm, where the worst hoodlums and sailors, you know, was hanging out in saloons and things. And he was taking care of that for about 6 or 7 years. And then they moved him up in town for better jobs, of course, you know. So, but he was in good health. Yeah.
So there are different opportunities. And You don't think hard work is bad for you, then it's good to start off.
I advise the young people, if they would grow up today, get a job, and of course jobs are scarce today. And work hard. Take care of, don't drink, don't smoke. That's the best thing, and work hard, then you live a long time.
You never smoked or?
Yes, I did, I quit 16 years ago. And I decided I'd cut that out because